Whenever you're ready. Okay, I'll go ahead and call to order for the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting Tuesday, March 8th, if the audience will join the Board in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First is public comment. Number one, this comment carries for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Not seeing anybody move to the mic. Agency reports, visiting nurse services, annual report, and Wood Long.
Sure.
Come on, right up here to the
down.
Absolutely. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Don't move the microphone.
There we go.
No, she has one.
No, she has one.
Okay.
She has one. That little thing works.
No, it's fine.
Yeah.
Yep, you're fine. You're good.
You're fine now. We're both green since you were last here.
Go ahead.
High tech.
Okay, I guess. Okay, well, I'm Annie Wood Long, and I'm with Visiting Nurse Services, and this is Anna Vaughn. I'm the Outreach Director for our Visiting Nurse Services programs, and then our Foster Grandparent program is one program that falls underneath our Outreach.
And I'm the Program Manager for Marshall Story Boone and Dallas.
So, I don't know if you're very familiar with Visiting Nurse Services, but we are a nonprofit, community-based program. We're public health, agency in Polk County, and we serve children, adults, aging adults, and in the last 4 years, we merged with HCI, so Hospice of Central Iowa, and so now we serve pretty much prenatally to end-of-life services, so we have the full gamut. And Visiting Nurse Services has been providing public health services since 1908. So, but for our senior core program, foster grandparent is fairly new. So.
Well, in our Polk County, we actually have the program in Polk County for over 6 years now, but Marshall Story Boone in Dallas has only been around for under VNS for only about 2.5 years. Is anybody familiar what our program is? Or
no,
does?
Give me a quick cursory overview. For example, if I have a family member that needs a service, approximately contact hours, that's the time you go in the home, you do this. What, you know, something of that nature.
Sure. In Marshall Story Boone in Dallas, if somebody's 55 and older and income eligible, which for our population is 200% of the federal poverty level, if they fall in there, they would go through basically an application process. And we don't place any children in homes. I know that sounds, I have to explain that one a lot because it's called the Foster Grandparent Program. Basically what the program is these, for the most part, seniors go into the schools and read with kids and work with math. Some rock babies all day. They can work all the way with children 0 all the way to 21. It just depends on what their preference is as far as that goes. Usually we ask them where they would like to serve. We have sites that would like grandparents, but we'd like to place them as well for one as close to their home as possible and what age group they would like to work with as well. And then on top of that, they get, since we are federally funded, they do get a stipend, an hourly stipend of $2.65 an hour, and that is because they are considered low-income seniors for the most part. And then they also, if they drive their own car, they get 40 cents per mile. If they do not drive, we have an agreement. In Story County, we have an agreement with HRDA, and they provide transportation.
Do you want numbers?
Absolutely.
Yep. Okay.
Well, I've read the report you submitted. I'd love to. So I serve on a committee with Noreen, and so I've heard just a little bit about
Wonderful.
It. And I know that this is a program that we would love to see expand.
Yes.
I'm really interested in hearing about where we were before you guys took over, where we are now, and what we need to do to grow this to the level that it needs to be here in Story County.
Absolutely. Do you want to give some history and then kind of current numbers?
Right. The program that had it before VNS took it over had about, 70 grandparents in the four county area. They were closed due to, I think there was a couple factors on why they were closed. And then when we took it over, we currently have 39 grandparents, but that doesn't include the ones that have left or the ones, basically the ones that leave. Usually it's due to relocation. They usually move by their families. Medical, obviously, is a big one for us. And then very, very few we've had to let go discipline reasons or it just wasn't a good fit. And that total actually was, is, as far as over the program since we started, is closer to about, about 60, but we're down, we're at 39 right now, just as of this day today. So,
right.
And that's the four counties. Story County actually between July and December had 10, and because of health issues, we've actually, we're down to four right now. So, and one of us is actually on medical leave right now. So, we're trying to definitely bump up our recruitment in Story County, which included actually meeting with Deb here in your guys' office on some recruitment ideas, which we've already started getting the ball rolling on those, too.
And we like to get 15 hours a week?
Yep, they must do at least 15 hours a week. We have some that want to do 40. I suggest they start with 15 so they don't get burnt out right away, but they must do at least 15, which obviously is one of the reasons sometimes we get people that apply but then aren't able to do the 15 hours, too. So depending on which age group you're working with, 15 hours can be a little exhausting.
So we have a staff person in our agency who has the ability to dedicate about 2 days a week to just do outreach in the community. And so she's hitting up all of the counties for the foster grandparent program and doing some really grassroots outreach efforts just to increase those numbers. And so that includes not only the volunteers, but potential sites that could house our volunteers so that they could work there to complete their hours. So kind of future goal, I know you've been working really hard in Story County to get the volunteers, but with that 15 hours a week, and then they need to be healthy and able to get to their sites, and then transportation is often a barrier. And so some of those kind of make it a difficult part. So if you bring on volunteers, sometimes maintaining them can be difficult.
What, if any, relationship do you guys have with RSVP?
We actually have a very good relationship with RSVP in Marshall County and Story that are both run by Kaylin. And we, as far as volunteers go, if I have some that are over income, I send them their way. And if they have some that are lower income that would like to do more hours and work specifically, obviously ours have to be with children. Theirs don't. They would send them our way. So I think the relationship with RSVP in both those counties and Boone County have, has been very beneficial for our program and their program.
And tell me the income requirements.
200% of federal poverty level, which is about $23,000 for a person living on their own.
Okay. What can we do to help? So you met with Deb. That's the place to start with us. What can Story County do to help grow the program to the level we need it to be here in Story County? Which four doesn't sound like enough to me.
And it's not. We would obviously like a lot more. We have a, some sites already that would like a grandparent. We just don't have anybody to place there. And as she said, as Annie said, we do have that one staff that's doing strictly recruitment, which is helping us out because we are a staff of two. It's just me and I have a coordinator out of the Boone office. So she's definitely able to pick up some of those things that we can't always or don't have time to do. You know, at this point, we're thinking outside the box and inside the box. And we've also, our Boone numbers are so full that we're running out of Boone sites. So we're actually asking our Boone new recruits if they're willing to drive to Ames so we can get those spots filled in Ames, which obviously will put a little bit more on mileage. But if we can get somebody into the Boone schools, that's another route we're taking. So.
This is where Herta might be able to help you with transportation in that area since you already have a relationship.
Absolutely.
Well, in Herta is, they're kind of, they let us know which one, which counties. We do have a, like a grandma in Maxwell, and the hours sometimes work, sometimes they don't. And Herta in Boone is run by somebody else, unfortunately.
But that still comes under us. I'm on the Herta board. I'm the vice chair of that board. The buses are owned by not Boone, that agency. They are
Boone County Transportation?
Yeah, they don't own the buses.
Okay.
The Herta buses is federally funded to provide transportation for the seven county region. And so since you already have something there, if there's a question of being denied opportunity, I would suggest you reach out to Julia Castillo, tell her that you presented to the Story County Board. I wanted her to maybe look into this a little bit more to see if they can't work with you. Because right now, you know, they do transport people, clients from Mary Greeley to Boone and vice versa. And then we're already talking about expanding some different services and bringing on using the shuttle bus that we just purchased through United Way. So there are some potential growth opportunities there. But I'd just like to maybe have you touch base with them and then see what we can find out, how we can work with you.
Okay. And I am on the transportation collaboration for Story County. Right. And I was not aware that Boone was willing to drive from our Story.
Well, it doesn't have to necessarily be Boone, but it's part of that service. So either their driver or the drivers from here, but they are supposed to be able to do that.
Okay.
Yeah. We do cross county lines. Yeah. So it's not just strictly one county only.
Okay. Definitely email her.
Okay.
One thing we're doing right now is we're working closely with the advocacy strategies group with lobbying efforts. So we started gearing up this summer to be prepared for the session, but working with our lobbyists to make an ask to the state legislature to at least have a budget line for statewide appropriation for senior court programs. We get our federal grant from the Corporation for National and Community Service, and that's kind of what sets our volunteer levels. And then we have to match that grant with local funds, 20%. And so across the state, that's difficult. And usually the number one thing is transportation. And so we're making an ask of $350,000 for statewide efforts, which will definitely help on the programming. But of course, anytime we talk to legislators, they're totally on board with the senior core programming. They just say it's a tight budget. So we'll see. We've talked to many legislators, and we're looking in the Health and Human Service bill. We're looking in the education budget bill. So we'll see kind of how that pans out. So, but.
Outstanding. Well, we appreciate the work that you do, and anything we can do to help, let us know.
We very much appreciate
that. Thank you.
That.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Next is the consideration of minutes from March 1st. Move approval of the second. Motion in the second. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Two?
Aye.
Consideration of personnel actions. Move approval.
Second.
Motion in the second. Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Two? Aye. Consideration of claims.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion in the second. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Two. All right, claims have been approved. Consent agenda, gentlemen, we need to add utility permits 1650 through 1653.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Two. Aye. No public hearing items. Additional items. Bond refinancing. Discussion and consideration of review of refinancing timeline. Refinancing estimates of refinancing the county's Series 2008-9 general obligation bonds. Travis Squire, Senior Vice President of Piper Jackson Company.
All right.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Travis, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing? I have an additional handout for you, so okay. I'll bring that up.
Get you right there.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Can I get one to grab?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought I grabbed it before.
Would you like me to sit and speak into the mic? Is that
either one's fine.
Either mic is good?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me come speak to the board this evening. I said Travis Squires at Piper Jaffray in Des Moines. Senior Vice President in our Des Moines office. I worked for quite a few years with Rex Ramsey, and he was the kind of our lead with Story County before his retirement after 39 and a half years in the business. So I feel privileged that I was able to learn from one of the stalwarts in the business. So I've been working at Piper Jaffray for about 10 years now. and in that time worked with primarily public entities in the state of Iowa, so counties, schools, community colleges, cities. And you know, one of the services that we do for our clients is that we routinely monitor refinancing opportunities. We have a database that keeps track of outstanding debt. Your financing has been one that we've been looking at. You know, obviously, when you originally did the financings back in 08 and 09, they were 10-year financings at very nice interest rates. You have now reached, as we come to the spring and summer of 2016, you've reached the prepayment date on those bonds or the call date. So typically on a 10-year financing, that's going to be about 7 years in out of a 10. Sometimes you push that a little bit. So both of those bond issues become callable this June. And what that means for the county is that you could pay them off without any penalty. So if you just had funds setting aside, you could pay them off. Conversely, you could also look at refinancing them for lower interest rates. Given where interest rates are today and that you only have 3 years left, you're only looking at a 3-year borrowing on the refinancing. So that's one of the reasons you're able to look at lower interest rates. So I put together a refinancing estimate based on financing that we just completed. Well, I'll say we actually completed it at 7 a.m. this morning when Ballard Community School District approved their refinancing of some of their general obligation bonds. So I used those interest rates as well as rates from a refinancing we did last week for Lee County to kind of gauge where we think your interest rates would be. Obviously, there's some differences. You know, Story County has an excellent bond credit rating. When you've accessed the markets in the past, it's been met with, you know, relative ease. I said there's not really any headwinds for investing in general obligation debt of the county. So, but as I put this together, there are a four sheet kind of packet that kind of walks through the information. I could have spared you some time and or space and put a lot of it on one page, but I thought if you wanted to write something down, you got some white space there. So on this page, it says existing debt that is the target of the refinancing. You see two repayment schedules. Mm-hmm. So on the left is your 2008 bonds. On the right is your 2009 bonds. And you can see your annual payments are roughly $240,000 per year on the 2008 bonds. On the 2009 bonds, they're slightly larger, closer to $620,000 per year. You can see the interest rates for each issue, and interest rates are typically by maturity. The average rate remaining on your 2009 bonds is just north of 3.2% and just north of 3.75% on your 2008 bonds. The proposal that we have for the county would be to move to interest rates that are closer to 1.3% on an all-inclusive basis with respect to fees. So you can see these payments, sources and uses of funds on the next page to kind of illustrate the mechanics and uses of funds at the top. So the only thing that you would have on your uses of funds would be cost of issuance and payoff of the bonds on June 1 of 2016. So the amount that will be remaining is approximately $2.4 million. Issuance costs are estimated at just under 2% of the financing, and then you see bond proceeds $2,435,000. So you're going to issue bonds to not only pay off the old bonds, but roll in any financing cost for the new issue as well. Now these are an estimate at this time. Issuance costs would include your bonding attorney fees and a rating fee if you were to go that route on a bond rating. And then underwriting costs would be the cost of selling the bonds to the investors. But before, you know, there are multiple methods in which you can complete a financing. You know, one would be what we'd call a conventional bond issue. This would be how the bonds were originally sold. And, you know, you have the chance for investors around the country to invest in your bonds. Another option would be looking at something that we would consider a private placement. It's a more direct marketing technique, and it might just be drawing a circle or, you know, in a 30-mile radius around the county and saying, let's start with these area financing banks, you know, financial institutions who might have interest, and start that route. The advantage you may see there is you are able to eliminate the rating fee. But, you know, to access the market at probably these lowest interest rates that you'll see on the next page, you're likely going to need the bond rating. Now, That being said, there are some strong banking and financial institutions within your county, so you may get the benefit of not having the rating from those institutions as well. So I'll talk a little bit. I know you have a timeline that assumes the conventional bond issue. I'll talk a little bit about how you could look at that alternate option as well when we get to reviewing the timeline. So the following page then does have your new debt service schedule. And so this would combine the two issues into one. If you recall from the original financing, they were originally split out to try to stay under a $5 million tax exemption certificate that would allow you to be exempt from rebate. That doesn't apply here with the refinancing, so you could combine them into one issuance. You will save a little bit on your debt administration costs with Bankers Trust by doing that as well. So you can see in this case you have bond payments of about $820,000, $25,000 per year on average, interest rates ranging from 0.7 out to 1%, a true average rate of 0.9 by the time you were to throw in issuance cost. We'd call that a true interest cost rate. You're up to 1.3. So that takes into account the financing cost and gives you an average rate, kind of the difference between a face value rate on a mortgage refinancing and the APR. So savings then is on the following page. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like this is a huge amount of savings. I mean, this is about $25,000 per year of savings to the taxpayers. That would accrue over the next 3 years, a total of about $83,000 total savings. Not a huge needle mover, but it does save the county money. As far as looking at different thresholds of, well, when does it make sense to refinance, or when should we just ignore it because it's almost paid off?
Now, is this savings also factored in the cost for the refinancing, that I looked at on the first page that you were going through?
Yeah, it does factor in the about 2% issuance cost. So this would be net of all of those costs. It's still $82,000 of savings.
Okay. Basically, when we'd be cutting the cost of the money for the next 3 years in half.
Right.
So it'd be, if we just stick with what we got, the cost of the money over the next 3 years is $165,000. If we go this route, in essence, you cut it in half. But Travis, I would like if we could just take a step back for just a second. So this board was not seated when these bonds were originally, and this may be more for you, Lisa, but this board was not seated. Give us a little history lesson on this. So in 2008 and 2009, the Board of Supervisors decided to go out for bonds in order to, did we use 100% of the proceeds to for road improvements?
Road improvements.
And was it $9 million originally that we, over the course of the two issuances? So it's $9 million, and we're down now to about $2.5 million left to pay on that. And here's an opportunity to cut the cost of that money, at least in half, and maybe better than half, because if we stick with a local institution and we don't have to spend some of the dollars, we can, that's another $30,000?
Probably not that much. Probably 10, 10 to 15.
Another 10,000 that we could say. And I just want to make sure that I'm right on where this money came from, what it was used for, and then where we are today if we look at going forward with this.
Yeah, you're right on those. Road improvement bonds, both had similar purposes. Part of that larger $9 million project split into two issues because of the rebate exemption that was being targeted.
The timing worked out that we had to split them up into two different.
Yeah.
And I think we were here for the last project, which was Dayton Avenue.
So it's a part of the reason it was split. If you stay under a $5 million amount, it allows you to not hit these, be required to hit these spending tests. So it allowed you to borrow at low interest rates while funding your projects as they came up, as opposed to accelerating all your projects to do them within an 18-month period of time.
Right. But now both of them are eligible to, in essence, refinance without penalty.
Correct. Yep.
And that's where it makes sense to roll it into one.
Yep.
Yeah,
so that, did you have a, was the timeline in the packet?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Are there any other questions on the numbers? Do you want to talk a little bit about the timeline that was proposed and put out there?
Well, it looks to me like the timeline says that if we move, we can have this done by June 1st.
Right.
Correct.
And again, it looks to me like you're talking about saving 80-some-odd thousand dollars by going this route all in. Because my first concern is, okay, what is the cost of doing this going to do to us? And there's a point that there's no value in doing it. I think when you can cut the cost of money in half over a three-year period, I think that's worth doing. That's my feeling.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to save anywhere between $80,000 and $90,000 for the course of this next 3 years. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Okay. Now, the option with discussing with the local banks, there's a couple different procedures that are in place, and we could do that as part of a financing. In other words, as an underwriter, just to have a focused effort on discussing with the banks. The issue there is you're probably still going through the bond rating process and have that expenditure. If you look at what we call more of a direct loan or direct placement, we would avoid the rating cost. In other words, just directly market, send them all a term sheet, give them, I'd say, kind of a relatively short deadline to kind of turn it around, because we want the option, if they're not interested, to be able to still keep the timeline of being done by June 1. But we could kind of do these at the same time.
Wait, what's the downside of going that route? Because that's the vision I have is that you guys would reach out immediately to local institutions, say, do you have interest in taking this $2.5 million at, I don't know, X interest rate,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, about around 1%.
Around the 1% interest rate. And if we can get that and do business with a local bank and save $10,000, it all makes sense to me, as long as we don't get into it and then it puts us behind the eight ball if nobody has interest in taking that bank.
Yeah, so the only thing there is just making certain that I have a frank discussion with your bond attorney, because it'll ultimately affect their timeline, because instead of allowing them to work on bond proceedings for a conventional bond right away, they'll kind of be pushed off a couple of weeks. So as I look at this timeline, I did have setting the date for the hearing at next week's meeting. I would probably bump that down to the 22nd and then bump the hearing to your April 4th meeting or April 5th meeting. Just a minor adjustment. It's not going to impact your overall timeline. Just those steps would probably move a little bit. The other thing that you would save by doing a private placement, what we'll call a private placement, is that currently you have annual ongoing disclosure expenditures that Piper Jaffray does for you. Those would go away, because as a private placement, those bonds aren't subject to the SEC oversight, so you don't have that continuing disclosure. So in fact, you're gonna cut some other administrative costs by doing that as well. So I think it makes all the sense in the world to pursue that option. If it's, the hard part is you're talking absolute rates at 1%. I mean, not a lot of banks, when you call them up on the phone and say, hey, are you interested in buying a bond for 1%? You know, it's not a great conversation starter, but at the same time, I think they'll recognize, in fact, some of your local banks bought some of these original bonds, so they might just be swapping out positions, and we know that the support that they've shown in the past. So I don't see any reason starting there. If they can't do it, they can't do it, and I just say it's no hard feelings either way.
Absolutely, but when you're looking at dealing with Story County right now, with the fiscal position we're in, it's like finding money in the street if you're one of these financial institutions. It's 1% for 3 years.
Yep.
It's better than you're doing a lot of places.
Well, that's a tax-exempt return. So, really it's, their return is closer to 1.7.
Okay. Yeah,
so if we didn't get takers in that regard, what's your second option?
The second option then would just to be to underwrite the bonds and sell it to investors around the country. So, we go through a marketing process. We reach out. It might not be local banks, but I'm guessing there are Iowa banks who would want this type of financing. So, certainly that would be the approach that we would be looking at. Piper as the underwriter, to try to keep your costs down as much as possible. Instead of having a financial advisor and an underwriter, we just go as underwriter, do the work, and sell the bonds to investors. So, in this case, as you noted, the one of the drivers is keeping issuance costs as low as you can, because there's not that many years to spread out the issuance costs. You saw your average rate about 1, adding in fees puts it at 1.3. So if we can try to keep those fees down, you have some ability to even absorb a little bit higher rate from the local bank, and that'll be our analysis, that net of all fees involved. Let's say they're not at the 0.9 average rate, and they're at 1.1, but because fees are lower, you can get to the same place.
Yeah.
And give or take, maybe you're off $5,000. You know,
well, and that doesn't even include, you mentioned that we would have less reporting to do.
Correct.
Going this route. That doesn't even include that, which I think there's some value there.
Yeah, we'll do an all-in analysis to give you the, you know, apples to apples on that. So, so then for today you have, and this is kind of the first step, the review. There's an engagement letter that has primarily disclosures. You know, in the event that, you know, we set fee tiers based on where your rating is, in the event that you have a local bank purchase the loan, it would likely be a placement and non-rated. We will provide a discount on that as well. So if that's the case, we'll make certain that we disclose what that looks like at the end of the day. At the end of the day, we're a regulated broker-dealer, so we're going to be required to provide you with a fair offering. That's with respect to fees and interest rates. So.
All right, so to get us started, I would move that we do, in fact, pursue refinancing our Series 2008-2009 GO bonds with the expected effective rate of somewhere around 1%.
Second.
We motion and a second. Is there anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Two.
Aye. And then I would further move that we enter into an engagement letter with Piper Jaffray and all the related disclosures to facilitate that refinancing.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. The only thing I would add that the comment was made that as opposed to the March 15th meeting, that information would be backed up to the 20th.
Yeah, the expectation in my motion is that Piper Jaffray will run the process out and need to get us to the end of it.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Good.
Sanders.
Yeah, aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Two.
Aye.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much. If there's any questions in the process, and as we get through with an updated timeline, we'll communicate about meetings. If there's meetings you want us at to review and be available to speak, just let us know.
Okay.
We'll be there.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob.
Okay. So that knocks out the next item also.
Yeah.
I try to kill two birds with one stone wherever possible.
Nice job. Discussion and consideration of Woodruff Construction Warehouse Building Addition. Jerry Moore, planning and development. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning.
Jerry.
How are you doing today?
So they cut down a bunch of trees on this site. I was surprised looking at your, I appreciated your aerial views comparing to, I think it's 2013 to... So recently on that site.
Yeah, what you have before you is a zoning permit application and a site development plan to review. Woodruff Construction is located at 56722 241st Street in Story County. This is primarily where their equipment storage is located, their trucks, supplies, that type of thing. They have very few customers come to this location.
This is the southeast corner of I-35 and Highway 30.
Correct. Right. Proposed improvements, a 40 by 70, 2,800 square foot warehouse addition. And again, it's a zoning permit, site development plan. There's our location, southeast corner of that Mixmaster, I-35 and US 30. They're on 241st Street. Here's an aerial from 2013. We took some site photos too that might help kind of explain what's happened in those in this location. In that western area, you see a lot of green, and I think most of those are evergreen trees. And then to the south of where the buildings are, those are deciduous trees. This is about a 4-acre site. The northeast corner is where the access is. There's a chain link fence with a gate. The drive parking areas are primarily gravel with some mixed dirt. The main building is on the northeast corner there. They have an office. They use it for equipment repair and some storage. The building to the west is primarily their warehouse, and that's the building that they want to add on to.
And is it roughly double? Just take the building that we're looking at and double it and move it to the west?
Right. The existing building to the west is about 2,000 square feet, so a little more than double.
Good.
2015 aerial, you can see that there was some substantial clearing that took place. Woodruff Construction acquired this property, though, in July of 2013. The statement to us was that the previous property owner removed it, much of the materials. We don't know for what, if they're trying to get ready for a building project or a development reason, but there were three or four piles of tree limbs, yard waste debris. They Woodruff is proposing to burn it, I think, this summer. So to the west and south is primarily where they're keeping their outdoor storage of materials and such. And again, there is an existing stand of deciduous trees on the south side of those buildings. Perspective view, this is looking to the south. To the lower right corner, you see the on-ramp to from the freeway to Highway 30. And again, the building that they want to add on to is to the right of that. It's the west building.
When you say west building, I'm looking at a smaller one?
Shorter one.
I should have brought my...
Okay, I'm looking at here. There's the big one you see right in the middle.
Right.
And
so they're talking about building a new building, Wayne, kind of just beside the square one.
Yeah.
So as you're looking at it, just to the right of the one that looks almost square.
Right. We're all
building a building
apart.
Similar to
that. Oh, okay. So right now it's just a clear spot there.
Right
where that looks like a little box of bus or,
yep,
or a side car.
Yep.
So it would be to the in that area. Okay, gotcha.
Right of that.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay.
This is another perspective drawing. This time we're looking north. You see the on-ramp to Highway 30.
Hey, Jerry, do you have a feel? So DOT is getting ready to do the flyover project starting in 17, where they're going to shift that exit further to the east. And they're going to take, I mean, I don't think it's going to get all the way to Woodruff's property, but they're going to take definitely some of this property that's sitting to the west of Woodruff's property. How does that impact all this? Does it impact all this?
Well, we did send, because this is within the Highway 30 limits of that project, we did send it to the DOT, and they gave it a thumbs up that it wouldn't be, that this project wouldn't be impacted.
Wouldn't impact, okay.
It would, and nor would the interchange project be impacted.
Because currently all this is in a preservation, because they're working, there's
preservation zone for the
and
US
the entire
Highway
length
30.
Of 30, and then a little bit north or south because of the proposed changes that are going to.
Okay. They don't want anything done. But they were okay with
they're okay with this project with regard to the Mixmaster project and US 30.
Okay.
However, that's going to be.
All right.
So here's our site plan. This is probably the fourth version of the plan. What you see is there's about 24 parking spaces, and keep in mind this is gravel, but we have a requirement of basically one tree per five parking spaces. We also have a buffering requirement from like company trucks, and so we're trying to address two issues here with having what we came to is to show the area along that north where there's like eight trees. That's going to cover the buffering for the trucks and the parking. To the west, that's they're going to reseed that. They've decided that they'll put in shrubs and a few trees. And then to the west of that existing building, you see the footprint, 40 by 70. And then to the south of that, we have a erosion control requirement. They're going to put in some silt fence to help address that. Elevation, it's going to match the existing building. It's a 22 feet height. There's going to be an overhead door on that west end. Where did the site photos? Again, that northeast corner, there's a chain link fence with a gate. That's where they park the employee vehicles. We're going to be panning to the south. That's the north wall of the east main building. West wall of that main building. This is the building that they're proposing the addition to. It'd be on the right side of this. At that location, we're looking to the southeast. Looking directly east.
Yeah, so it's just going to extend that building over.
Yep, expansion of that existing building. And then this is looking to the north. And this is the backside of the buildings. Again, they do have some supplies, equipment that they use for their business. We have a dumpster buffering requirement, but you can see we've got some existing deciduous trees that are kind of helping with that.
Where's the existing septic on this system right now?
It's actually on the south end of that north building, about where you see the drive, which isn't probably the best situation.
Okay, now going back to the earlier discussion where you are requirement for buffering to add the trees and so forth, but the reality of those is that they really don't create any visual buffering on, for a number of years. So what is the thought process as to why that is such an important requirement?
You're talking about the west end?
Yeah.
Yeah, that with the we have a requirement that you cannot remove more than 15% of a natural natural vegetated area, which includes trees and prairie and all types of vegetation.
Okay.
This is not a black and white situation because a lot of this stuff was removed by the previous owner. We don't know what reason it was removed. So now we come with a new property owner. They've removed trees, and I'll show you probably why they did. They've claimed that they're dead, and you can see from a photo.
What they're talking about as part of this plan, putting in, did you say eight?
Well, on the west, on the north end, eight trees.
So right where the Woodruff truck is parked right now, we would
have landscape there.
Landscaping.
And this is elevated above the on-ramp.
It's fairly visual. I think it's one of the reasons that they bought it, and they keep that tractor-trailer parked there just like that. I mean, it's effectively a billboard.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's that west area that's been cleared. And then you can see from this photo, the last few years, I'm not an arborist, but evergreen trees have really struggled, and it starts with decay on the bottom limbs, and it moves up. So where you can see on the tops of those, you know, they look like they're in good shape from those aerials from 2013, but, you know, the bottom half of these trees are gone. So I think that's why Woodruff removed the trees that they removed. So with that, planning staff's recommending that the zoning permit and the site development plan be approved. I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Yep.
No, it looks like you've been engaged with them, and it looks like presented their analysis of future expansion, and it seems like it fits well within our guidelines. So,
So I'll move approval of the warehouse building addition, construction of warehouse building extension, the addition to Woodruff.
Second. And a motion and second to approve the building addition. Is there anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Duke.
Aye. That's been approved.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
Discussion and consideration of the draft capital improvement plan.
CIP.
Run through a few slides. This has been in front of you in various formats a couple times, but I do want to highlight some changes that occurred since one, we went for public comment last fall, and then two, just difference in approach from last fiscal year. Again, was originally identified the need for a capital improvements plan in May of 2013 with your first strategic plan. And so we've been running a 5-year capital improvements plan basically since that time or shortly thereafter. Again, it matches the fiscal year, July 1st through June 30th. In this one before you, there are 5 fiscal years. Past ones, we've only run out 3 or 4, and we're now to 5. The process is on the slide. You all know how we do them. I don't need to spend time on that. But definitions remain consistent with capital assets and projects, and then 4 different types of projects: equipment, new project construction, modification of an existing project. That would include a project extension, and then building maintenance. Any questions thus far in the background? And then delve right into the projects then. I have a slide generally for each fiscal year. Fiscal year 2016 is going to be our current fiscal year as we finish this out. Again, the CIP does overlap that fiscal year basis. Of these, we have several that are new, and specifically that's going to be the Justice Center Wellfield buyout, the replacement of the keyless entry panels, the body and in-car camera lease agreement for the Sheriff's Office, and then a last one that has been added, and these I need to back up to. All 4 of these have been added through the public, the budget process, through the discussions that occurred through the work sessions, and we're not as part of the process of the plan that was published last fall. But the last one would be the animal shelter purchase. Specifically in that last one, because we're in the process of negotiating, there is a TBD for the price there. We're not at a point where that's even anything that.
Well, just an update for the board. So now we have a draft purchase agreement in front of the owner of that building. Ethan and I met with the gentleman, and I believe that we're starting to get some solidity there. There is real interest in selling it. I think there's interest in selling it at a reasonable rate. And so this TBD should be moving to a hard number here sooner rather than later.
And this is, as in all plans, is meant to be a guiding document, not solid and set in stone.
So let's talk about that for just a second, Leanne, because it looks to me like, so when we created this group, and I'm a huge fan of this group, the intention here was to make sure that we get as many eyes and as much expertise looking at our larger projects as possible, rather than it just coming to us and the first thing we hear about it is a request from the department or the office to spend what we consider to be major dollars. Now we put together a group that's able to sit around the table and really discuss each one of these projects and come up from their perspective with a good prioritization of how these projects rank. The intention is that all items would start and funnel through that group as they come to the board. Now, we've got a couple items here that don't fit that, and we're going to continue in the long haul to occasionally have items like the body cameras that are going to necessitate kind of a different flow, where it's going to flow from this group to the CIP group to get some feedback and then back to us.
I appreciate that. That is a point that I want to build on, too. I hope after we get this one approved, might take a step back and look at the process, too, and the time frame. Before budget work sessions begin and once the auditor gets the draft budget request, maybe that's when we have some additional meetings with the group and then go for public review. So, again, a third year into this, and so we're gladly learning with each time we go. Any questions on fiscal year 2016? That finishes out this current fiscal year.
Do we look like we're on track with all these projects to accomplish what we say we're going to accomplish, or is there going to be some necessary carryover from year to year?
Well, in talking to, on one of these in particular, in talking to Mike Cox, who's our conservation director, the sensitive areas inventory update, which is halfway through the table, which is $15,000 this year, in your budget for next year is $70,000. You'll probably be reducing that down to $45,000. Mike has indicated he'll find $15,000 in this year, and then they'll carry over into the third year. There is a project that was previously on this one, but because of time frame, it's been moved to next year, and that's the Iowa State Research Park. But generally, all these They're all actually phased projects, with the exception of the Justice Center, which is finished, the Wellfield buyout, and then the keyless entry panel. I'm not sure the timing of that, but I think that's intended to be accomplished yet this fiscal year. Things like the purchase of the animal shelter, that will be the flexibility. Fiscal year 2017. Vast majority of these are conservation, and they are continuation of projects. The Hickory Grove campground shower, it'll be the final out then, fiscal year 2017, as well as the construction for the Prairie Rail Trail. The big one that really comes out in 2017 is the Research Park, green space design and completion. Honestly, that has been on our CIP for now the past 2 to 3 years, so it's not a new item to add. It just is we're pushing that back a year, and then you'll see that 2 more consecutive years. Also a new one is the Jordan Acres land acquisition.
Could we go back just a second? I need to make mention.
Yeah.
I did get a phone call this morning from Arden Greiner from Sherman Township, and he just wanted, he wasn't going to be able to make the meeting, but wanted me to express his concern about the possibility of using, as he phrased it, the east side TIF dollars for any green space project in the Research Park.
And is there such thing as an east side?
So I appreciate Arden. Arden has been a really, really consistent voice on his feelings about TIF. What's interesting about that is what brought him here to see us was the utilization of TIF to complete the Dakin's Lake project, which I believe, now at least last time I talked to him, he's a huge supporter of what ended up happening at Dakin's Lake. It's interesting to me that Arden wants to draw lines in the county, and so just for kicks and giggles, I took a look at where tax revenue to the county comes from, and the reality is almost 75% of our valuation in the county comes from the area west of I-35. So it's about one-third in terms of land size, one-third of the county is valued, three-quarters of the valuation.
Right.
I would hate for us to ever go down the road of drawing lines in the county and saying we're only going to utilize tax dollars from this one section of the county to do anything good for the county. I think it separates us. It's one of the reasons Wayne has spoke for years, and I think rightly spoke for years, about the appropriateness of supervisors being elected at large. The reality is all three of us serve everybody in Story County, and it is one Story County. This research park, so where we are, is it looks like this capital improvement program has $1.25 million budgeted for FY17. And what this board has not committed to is exactly how we're going to pay that $1.2 million next year. Now, we are going to run the TIF process, Leanne, as I understand it, on this project in order to get to the end of that conversation, but that's a three-month conversation, is that right?
Yeah, generally.
That's a three-month conversation, and so I would encourage Arden and anybody who has feelings on what's the appropriate use of dollars to really weigh in. I think it's appropriate that he called you today.
Yep.
Clearly, I come down on the other side.
Okay. Thanks.
Fiscal year 2017, the new items are, I've already said that, the Jordan Acres. You see the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers land acquisition of $112,000 pushed to fiscal year 17. This was actually in our program for 2015 and then 2016 at $150,000. So now we're lowering it to $112,000 and pushing out to next fiscal year. The Dakin's Lake vault toilet is a new item. And again, year two of the sensitive areas inventory update. Again, that is proposed in your budget, $70,000, but when you take action on your budget, you may need to take action to...
$50,000 for a vault toilet? What exactly are we protecting?
Yes, your question.
We did discuss it.
We
talked about the difference of having that and a port-a-john.
I think it's basically it's a large composting
toilet.
It's a self-sustaining.
And it's on a big cement vault.
Yeah, this was extensively discussed at the Conservation Board, too, with the board on various projects and so forth. I knew that after it was still included in the budget, that it was going to still be a point of discussion when it came before this body, which we, you know, did have. I think they would still like to see some dollars, you know, there to consider that, whether or not it's going to be finalized or not, I don't know, but I think it's still in the deal. The hopes is that there will be a way to fund this type of request, but I told them I wouldn't count.
Yeah,
I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah, no, the only way it doesn't get funded at this point is if it gets pulled out on March 15th.
Right.
It just, I get it. I get why you don't want, you know, a portable plastic John out there.
Especially out there.
It tickles me, a vault toilet, that just, those two don't seem to go together.
Well, you know, the other side of the equation is, you know, Hickory Grove, we have the shower and
sure,
that type of thing. We don't have a proposal such as that in the Dakin's Lake, you know, area, other than the one area, which is in the main site. But to me, this is more of the old primitive. I think
it is right over on the primitive
side.
It's on the other side of the park.
Right.
It makes sense to me that we would have something. Again, I'm making fun, Wayne, more of the name of it than anything else.
I had a hard time wrapping my arms around that name, even writing it. The Justice Center project, the courthouse and building security, was kind of reevaluated through the CIP group. You'll recall it was broken out into different pieces. We did look at whole-scale Justice Center rather than just attorney's office consolidation. So that was pushed back to fiscal year 17 from fiscal year 2015 and 16.
Yeah, and just to point out for this body, this has now become, this thing is really, in a lot of ways, taken a life of its own. So our original conversation was about security at the front door and increasing and consolidating the county attorney's space. Now it's bigger than that. Now it includes jail. I mean, it includes almost every aspect of that building. And it's something we're going to have to dig in and try to figure out if we can fund it, what parts we can fund, and how we can fund it. And I hope we're going to have that conversation sooner rather than later.
So this first phase is for that overall planning work to occur. And then another new project is the core switch replacements through IT. And I'm not going to explain that because I don't understand it, but it is a necessity to ensure that we have continuity of our operations. Also, the paving of Grant Avenue from 190th to Gilbert City Limits is included. It was reduced, however, in the proposed CIP from 1.75 to 1.6, which matches your budget, proposed budget, keeping in mind intended commitment from cities of Gilbert and the school district of $150,000 to help pay for that project.
Well, there was discussion from the engineer about the possibility of a drainage district tile. And apparently, my understanding is that tile does, in fact, run on the west side of that entire length of that road in the right of way. So,
yeah, but in further conversations with the engineer, it looks like the only problematic piece we think now is going to be at the extreme southern edge.
Right.
The rest of it is either deep enough or far enough into the right of way that we're going to be fine. And so we just got to dig into this. The other part to this is the city of Gilbert and the Gilbert school system have both agreed in principle to fund half of the cost of the trail, but neither one of them have approved those kind of dollars yet. And so there's still a lot of work to do on this project.
The next are the West 190th Bridge and 660th Avenue Bridge replacements. And these are kind of substantial size. And you'll see these starting to be added, not only to, they're obviously in the five-year program, but they'll also be added to the CIP. And then last is the purchase of the tandem truck.
Yeah, and let's talk about 190th real quick. So that's the small bridge on 190th. So this is over by Prairie Moon Winery.
Okay.
And there's a small bridge and a large bridge.
One's right downhill.
And this one's further up the hill. And it's necessary in that there's a subdivision that you can only access by crossing one of the two bridges. It's the only way in. the conversation that I hope we'll continue to have, and I'm going to take every opportunity to have it here publicly because I think we're going to get some major pushback, is ultimately replacement of the Long Bridge, the one that goes across Squaw Creek on 190th, is not fiscally doable for the amount of traffic that we have there and the other possible routes. I believe it is harder and harder and harder to close that road with all the construction projects going in on Cameron School Road, and that will be a nice back way to get to Gilbert. And so what I'm suggesting that this body consider is that when we go in and replace this small bridge, we'll have to close all of 190th at that point, and people will have to access it from the west at that point, that we consider never reopening 190th all the way through, turn the long part of the bridge into a pedestrian-only bridge at that point, simply because I don't think this conversation gets any easier 3 or 4 years down the road when that long bridge would have to be replaced.
Any questions on year one, which is fiscal year 2017?
Nope.
2018 becomes a lot shorter. This is the construction improvements of the Justice Center. And then year two of the research park at $1.1 million. And then the last year of that sensitivity's inventory. Mm-hmm. 2019 is the last year of the research park at $1.1 for phase one. Is that right? Phase one and two, Rick?
Yep.
And then fiscal year 2020, we begin looking at this building. And these were all, these next two were pushed back a year. They were originally fiscal year 2018. And we pushed them back a year into 19 and 20. Or 20, they're 19, they're now 20 and 21. With that, the schedule that we followed, again, as I said earlier, I think we might want to look at modifying this later before we start the new fiscal year. I do want to thank Lisa Markley immensely because she sat down. I'm not sure how many times we sat down, but I know we did sit down a couple weeks ago and went through very tediously this year's budget and next year's budget to make sure the numbers matched for consistency. So not doable without her. And with that, are there any questions?
I move approval of the draft capital improvement plan.
Second. I have a motion and a second to approve the draft CIP. Is there anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Thank you, Liam. Planning and Development, quarterly report, Jerry Moore.
Once again.
All right.
Yeah, the last time I gave you a report, it was an annual report. So you're going to provide some information about permits, development projects, and then status of the 2016 work program. Permits, again, this is January, February. We actually had 5 single-family dwelling permits. One of those was a mobile home, average construction value, a little over $290,000.
Including the mobile home?
Well, the mobile home was $52,668. That was the value.
Okay.
So not bad for January, February. And then additions to single family, we had 2 of those. Average value, over $42,000. Accessory structures and additions, over $45,000. We reviewed 1 home business permit. We're currently reviewing 1 that's to be renewed. Addresses for new construction, we review 4 applications, and then property research. Anytime somebody is interested in knowing whether or not their parcel can be divided, we do that research for them. So we have 7 of those. Current development cases, the first thing there is the conditional use permit. That won't be coming before the Board of Supervisors. It was before the Planning and Zoning Commission. That's the Center Grove Orchard on 610th. Avenue and 210th, Highway 210. The Planning and Zoning Commission Did recommend approval of that with a 6-0 vote with conditions. This item will go before the Board of Adjustment at their meeting on the 16th.
And so tell me what happens there. So the Board of Adjustment then decides whether to grant the conditional use or not.
Correct. They can approve it outright. They can approve it with the conditions recommended by the Planning and Zoning Commission, or they can deny it.
Okay, but their decision ultimately is going to impact the county.
Correct.
Tell me about that. Tell me about the impact of the county depending on which way they go.
Well, the conditional use permit dealt with the addition of a 1/3 scale train that was added, expansion of a parking area to the north portion of the site. They had a dog show, frisbee dog show, the month of October that was included. And this actually came to our department through a complaint that we received regarding increase in traffic, noise that ended up coming from a PA system from the dog show that they had.
Right.
And then that garbage was ending up in the cemetery. But primarily it was the noise and the traffic were the two big concerns. And from the people that came to the meeting, those were echoed that night. So I did send an email to the board, to Deb, to Darren, to the county attorney's office, what those conditions were. And I think with those conditions, it gives us an opportunity to obtain additional information for the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Board of Adjustment to consider. The information that was submitted in 2008, there was an estimate of 1,000 people on their busiest Saturday. The applicant provided current information to show that on their busiest Saturdays, now they have 2,700 people. They estimated times three, so you're looking at about 8,000 people in this rural area on their busiest day. So that's a lot of traffic increase. So we've asked for a traffic study to be done by an engineer. With regard to the noise, we made a condition that they not use a PA system unless it's for emergency purposes. And then there's a caveat in there that if they do like a sound study, if they hire somebody to do a sound study for the Planning and Zoning Commission to consider or the Board of Adjustment to consider, then that could be an option as well. So again, with, you know, taking into account the concerns of this neighbors in that area, realizing that this is business has been in operation since 94,
right,
under a conditional use permit since 2008, taking into consideration all those things, we're hopeful that those conditions will address the current status and then give us more information to make decisions with regard to this use.
But all of this use rests squarely with the Board of Adjustment. We don't have any role in it.
Correct.
Are there any... Well, there's got to be other
than
farm-type items in other counties.
Well, and part of this is we have a definition of farm, retail, or novelty. And that's where everything starts with this. And we don't have detailed standards. So one of the things in the 2016 work program is to look at our current process and come up with a recommendation. So that's one of the things that planning staff we've had discussions and we're collecting information to make a recommendation on how to address situations like this so that they don't balloon, because there's no limit on the growth of this particular use. A lot of people in this building have taken, have gone there, they've taken their families there. It's very popular, but then you have a situation where there's a few residences that live in this area and they're in operation from the end of August to the end of December, 7 days a week.
Right.
And so there's not much relief in terms of traffic reduction. So one of the conditions that we had that got taken out was we were trying to come up with a way to eliminate the number of cars during the week, but maybe provide an opportunity to add an hour, but that got taken.
Well, I mean, so for me, it's either an allowable business or it's not an allowable business. I would be really interested. I mean, the one that tops to mind is Field of Dreams up there north of Dyersville, how they operate. There are other models for how these things are operated, and it's really a slippery slope that you're talking about when you say, hey, this is a 20-year existing business. How do we don't have a way to accommodate this. How do we recognize the very real impact that it has on neighbors? I'm going to be fascinated how the Board of Adjustment deals with this.
Yeah, you asked if you have a role. You can remand decisions that Board of Adjustments make to have them revisit the decision. And then, of course, an applicant, a neighbor that's not satisfied with a decision by the Board of Adjustment can petition district court.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so the way I've always viewed it is once when it rises to the level of needing to go before the Board of Adjustment, it's more or less out of our hands. The reality is, though, we've got to make decisions within the county based on what's decided from the Board of Adjustment.
So subdivision plats, you're going to be seeing a Gilbert residential parcel subdivision. We're currently reviewing that one now. The Irons is a development that's located at the Ames Golf and Country Club. It's very close to the city of Ames. It goes through the city of Ames, Planning and Zoning Commission, then their city council, the preliminary plat first. They're still at the review stage at the staff level, so they're not even ready to take this to the Ames Planning and Zoning Commission. But this is something that will be before the Planning and Zoning Commission here and the board.
Right. But this is Indiana Hayden runoff?
Correct.
What does our urban fringe plan say about who's the leader, us or Ames, on this?
Well, both have the review authority, but primarily it's the city of Ames. A couple weeks ago, we had the actual engineer, landscape architect, the builder
right
here to inquire about alternative compliance and threw out some ideas about things that they may be asking for alternative compliance.
Sure. Well, and my takeaway from that was it sounded to me like from Charlie Kuster from Ames that he was coming down, or I took it as Ames was coming down on the opposite side as Margaret in terms of an appropriate alternate approval for how some of the septic stuff was handled.
Probably the most difficult thing with this is it's in an R2 district. So in an R2 district, you can do a single family or a two family bypass, but it's supposed to be connected to a common or a central septic system. Well, what they're proposing is really on-site for each lot, an Advantex-type
right
system.
Right.
With
common discharge.
Well, there's a pipe. There's a pipe that everything drains into.
Ultimately, what I'm saying when I say common discharge is ultimately everything from one section goes to the same area.
And we're talking about more than just a few built homesteads.
Yeah, you're talking about eight on one side and 14 on the other.
There's like single family, there's like 14 lots, and then 8 to 10 bi-attached, sure, and then another 3 along 190th.
But ultimately, if you draw the line out far enough into the future, the expectation would be that the city of Ames will end up annexing. This is south of 190th. Clearly, Ames has already now made it to 190th. It just happens to be
so just the development that is just west of the old Moose Lodge that we're talking about?
No, this is development that is part of Ames Golf and Country Club.
Okay.
So it takes the empty space that's on the southwest corner of the country club and the area where that, I think it's an eyesore, the maintenance shed.
Right.
So that maintenance shed would go away, and there would actually be some things built there. And then I think there's another lot or two along 190.
They're showing three.
So this is just part of it.
This would be homes
on that
Yeah, I was thinking much further, closer to 69, so yeah.
Yeah, so between George Washington Carver, 190th, and the railroad tracks.
I'm with you.
Okay. Part of the requirement with that common system is it's supposed to be treated commonly, and that's an element that we're trying to get our brains around.
Right, so this would be handled, that Atlantic system would handle each of them individually, but ultimately they would all flow together before they're discharged, and I think I remember Margaret talking about she wanted it discharged
through that
under the deeper under the ground, and this would be discharged into one of the new ponds.
Right, right.
And then used for irrigation of the golf course. Right?
Correct.
Yeah.
To sprinkle the golf course. Part of initially what they were thinking about doing is rezoning the single family to R1 so that they could do on-site septics for the long cul-de-sac and for the three lots. But I think the route that they were going to go is to ask for alternative compliance for the biotest. And so...
Right.
If that's, and I'm going to reach out to the county attorney's office on that, because if they can ask for alternative compliance with biotest, I don't see why they can't ask for alternative compliance for the single family lots as well.
The only thing different there is they don't share a common wall. Right? I mean, right? You're not talking about it being dealt with a whole lot differently on the attached versus the non-attached. I think it'd be fascinating, especially if county staff and city of Ames staff end up on opposite sides of certain issues, how we deal with that.
Yeah, the city staff is reviewing it right now.
Call stalemate.
So zoning permit, Alliant Energy, 51,038 260th Street. They're proposing a 60-foot high tower. That hopefully will be before you, consent agenda. They were thinking about the need to have to apply for a variance. They obtain a fall radius, so they won't need to do that. So we're asking for the engineer drawings for that tower. And Woodruff Construction, you just saw. Ames Urban Fridge Plan amendments. The Bergeson annexation, that's on the south side of the city of Ames. They're proposing to annex that. It's triangular in shape. Surrey County Planning and Zoning did recommend approval. 6-0. This east industrial area northeast of the Mixmaster, the meeting room was full last week, and the Zoning Commission did recommend denial with a 4-1 vote with one abstention. Basically, what we heard from those that were opposing it is that it appeared to be much more of an area. Right now, they have the planned area development. They're proposing a pretty substantially larger area to expand into.
As a future use.
As a future use. So this is just all planning.
So are you hearing that there's real pushback on the actual area that Ames is talking about annexing soon? So the area that Ames is talking about annexing soon is basically Lincoln Highway to the railroad tracks to 590th. But as part of all this, as I see it, they're also talking about doing a different overlay in our urban fringe plan that extends way outside of that area.
Which would include the long-term industrial reserve,
right,
which is a part of that amendment. So, again, I think there's concern that this is maybe too big of a bite for right now, but the city council did approve budgeting to extend utilities. This is going to be before the city council on the 22nd. So we'll know what they think about this amendment. The board will either see what we showed you the last time or probably something significantly smaller.
Right, but two different levels of authority from this board, as I say, and you just help me with this, Gary, if I'm missing it. So, City of Ames can annex where they want to annex. I mean, we can oppose annexation if we want to, but the reality is, if City of Ames wants to annex, they can annex. We don't have a whole lot of control with that. If they say we're annexing to 590th and we're annexing between Lincoln Highway and the railroad tracks, they can annex that, and then it's 100% their call. Our real role is in the urban fringe plan and what that overlay looks like, especially outside the area that they're talking about annexing. Can we take that from what it currently is, which is agricultural, to an industrial reserve?
Right. And so far, that's all you've seen is a proposed map amendment. We haven't really seen an annexation plan.
Right. But if they're putting multi-million dollars in to extend the sewer out to 590th, and they're not going to do that and not annex.
Correct. I mean, that's something that they'll likely do. But I just want to make it clear that what would be before you is this Ames Urban Fringe map amendment.
Okay.
Cameron Estates, we did get the $100,000 letter of credit. That's for a two-year period. Again, there were three accesses along the east side of 505th Avenue that they needed to close. I think these were existing farm field accesses. There was a drainage area on the east side of Harvest Road that they needed to fix. The sidewalk to connect the two developments, they did agree to do that. That'll be hard surface. I think it's a 5 foot wide. They're calling it a trail, but it's a sidewalk to connect the two so that people don't need to go out to the public road to the south. And then it also includes the top coat for the road. Enforcement, we did have the issue with the property on 130th Street, which is west of Zeering. We did enter into a compliance schedule with that property owner. There's three different things that they're supposed to remove. They did meet the first stage of that to remove the tires and the wood. We've got another deadline coming up next Monday that we'll follow up on, but he's got till April 1st to get everything removed.
And he agreed to it.
And he agreed to it, and otherwise we've got a court date set for April 14th. Work program, things are progressing with E911 addresses. There was the statement of checking, doing an inventory on that, and Darren's staff did do that and came back that, you know, we do have quite a few that need some TLC. So we did put out some information in the county news bulletin. We've got flyers on bulletin boards. Information's on the website. And Leanne did provide some information on her weekly monthly radio show. Special events, we are working on some language draft ordinance in addition to farm retail or novelty, primarily because of what we learned through the issue there on 610th. Floodplain administration, there was a call for me to be a backup to Leanne. And she has offered to do some training. And I think she's had quite a bit of interest in that. Several people in the building have expressed interest in that. And then I also thought I would take training from the state once that's offered. Comp plan, C2C comp plan, things are moving along. We had a really good citizens task force meeting, their last one. We received some really good input, had a really good open house. The last open house at the Ames Library, and we're at the process now where the project team is reviewing the document from the beginning to the end thoroughly, and then the goal is to get the document to the Planning and Zoning Commission April 6th for review, and then at the hearing May 4th, and then sometime in May before the board for review, and then a hearing sometime in June.
Have we been able to stay focused, or is this turning into a Christmas tree where everybody's hanging their wants on there?
As far as I know, we're doing our best to stay focused.
Okay.
You know, everyone is providing valuable input. So it's been an interesting process. We also had to review whether or not we have any permitting authority with the Bakken pipeline. Initially, I think we had some discussion back in November about it. I went through our current development regulations. I don't see that we have any current permitting authority, unless there's something that the Board of Supervisors would like our staff to look at. And then I put construction, demolition, landfill. There was a charge to look at our regulations for a temporary holding site. I had a meeting with Keith on this, and I think I'm at a point where I need some input again from the Board, because I don't know exactly how, you know, the scope of this. In talking with Keith, it seems like process-wise, we can do ourselves big favors by working with citizens, you know, business community, people in the trailer, mobile home parks, by getting them to sort their materials, getting them to get it at the curbside, and then working with a third party to pick up. And then once they're picking up, I don't know why we wouldn't be able to get that taken to the Boone.
Right. The issue there, as I understand it, Jerry, is what happens if, so in my mind, God forbid, I use an F5 tornado, right, coming through and the damage that will do, and you think about how quickly that Boone site or any sites in central Iowa are going to get overwhelmed and just say, we can't handle anymore right now. And so my question then, and I believe Keith's, is, okay, what do we do? If we got nowhere to go with this, because if it's a major disaster, there's lots of things going on, where do we go, and is it in our best interest as a county to have this, what I consider to be an alternative staging site, where, to use your example, this mobile home park, right, we have them sort it, get it out to the road, we have somebody pick it up at that point, but we have nowhere to go with it. So our options then are we going to leave it where it is along the road, or are we going to have this one, what I consider to be a temporary site where we take everything in the county, have it further staged there, and then get rid of it as space becomes available. That's what I think we're trying to work through, because in my mind, the worst case scenario is, in terms of what kind of response this board can have, is we wait until an event happens before we start to figure out what our steps should be. That makes sense, or am I?
Yeah. And you're saying do the planning now, get a site located, go through that process.
Yeah, so this is not the coup cog that we've got Leanne running, because we're not talking about the continuation of government, but we are talking about the continuation of operations within our small and large towns, right? Ames is going to have their own method for dealing with these things, but you get much down below Ames in terms of size, and it's hard for any of our cities. You know, maybe Story City, Huxley, and Nevada can handle it on their own, but if you have something that hits the edge of Cambridge, they're not going to be able to handle what's got to be done. So now, in my mind, does it just stay piled up there in Cambridge, or do we have a site that we're taking everything to before we can move it on?
That's helpful.
Does it make sense that it's something we should be looking at?
Well, I think so, and the timing is now. I mean, this is...
Well, what we learned from Tuscaloosa and Joplin and some of those other things that have happened is you hope you never have to deal with it. But if you ever do, you'd rather have some of these things in place to go to on day one.
Right. I mean, we have a process in place, but, you know, it involves P&Z, Board of Adjustment, for reviewing a construction, demolition, landfill.
Right. And I don't want this. I want this to be something that's already gone through the process so that if it happens, we can move right now.
And I think probably actually it would involve identifying a landowner and approaching the landowner and say, in the event of.
Absolutely.
And you would want it as remote as possible, because at some point with the wood debris, somebody's going to come in and they're going to grind that into mulch. And that's, I mean, my cousin lived in Orlando, and the county put a large site 2 blocks from his where he lived after a hurricane. And when they came in to grind that up, I mean, for blocks and blocks around, people's houses were inundated with dust and dirt from the process. So I would think it would need to be as remote as possible. It's a site where, in the event of, you know, we've got 15 acres that we can identify that we can come in and deposit this you know, this debris, and whether it's sorted, you know, before it gets there or whether it's sorted there, I mean, because that's what they're going to look for. You know, the cities are going to say, we need to get this stuff out of here.
Right.
You know, we may not have the ability or the wherefore to sort it here, you know, but we need to truck it out of here. And that's where I think, you know, they would look to the county and say, hey, where can we take this?
And rightly so. Especially, so it's not a problem. It's not a huge problem if Boone and surrounding landfills don't close down. But we've seen it before. We've seen where they run at capacity. And if we have an event like this, it's not going to take long before we surpass capacity.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you. That's all that I have, unless you have some questions.
You're doing a great job.
Thanks.
We're glad you're here.
Thanks, Jerry. Thank you.
Last but certainly not least,
I'll be right back.
The County Outreach and Federal Projects Quarterly Report, Ian Hunter.
Was that trade deleted? I got the two.
Those two. Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I do want to apologize because the one I did put on the agenda, I put March 15th. But it's actually March 8th. Just quickly, some highlights of the past quarter. The blood drive, which we did meet our goal, wasn't necessarily as successful as I'd like to have seen. If we do it again, I'll bring it to the board to talk about maybe an alternate location, maybe looking at Ames. But then we lose a lot of employees that are in this building. But I know that even though we weren't as successful as I'd hoped, while we met our goal, we did save lives. So there's a benefit to that. Paul, thank you for sitting here again this year. Now, you've done it twice, I think. Rick's done it once during the State of the County. That is written. It will be in the next Our Story, too, the written State of the County, but it's also online. Did the start working the PPI update? PPI stands for Program for Public Information. You approved this 2 years ago, and I'll be bringing it back to you here shortly as part of our community rating system application. Then you did take action on the communications plan last month. Also, draft CIP, obviously, it was just done. I attended internet training, trying to figure out exactly what and where to put information on that. At this point, I have county news up there. I haven't officially publicized that to the county employees, though, but the next one I'll probably use to disseminate that newsletter. Citizen of the Year Award is open for nominations. That will close March 18th. So if you can help me get the word out of anyone you think might be interested in submitting a nomination. The applications are on our website, too, or else I can get copies. And then C2C Outreach. As Jerry said, we had the final public open houses, and now in this stage of the home stretch.
How many citizens of the year do we honor? So we did two this time.
Last year. I think we'll likely just one every year, unless it's an incredible pool of nominations that we call to decide. But still a new program, so it's up to you all on that. KUPCOG is overwhelming at best, but digging into it.
We gave it to the right person. I know it's overwhelming. I appreciate the time you're spending on it. This is one of those things. I hope that you're completely wasting your time. I hope this is something we never, ever, ever have to use. But if we do, the work you're doing and will do is so valuable.
Well,
Thank you for the vote of confidence. It really is. I've learned an enormous amount. I thought I knew a lot about Story County, too, but you can come see my walls. They're going to be even probably more decorated in the next couple of weeks. I'm on the home stretch of the data gathering, check-ins, departments based on information they gave me. I'm maybe a quarter of the way through actually drafting the plan itself based on some guidance that I've been following, some templates that exist. I have spreadsheets and spreadsheets and spreadsheets on information, which is really nice to have. But again, like you said, I hope this gets looked at every other year. We get trained on it, but beyond that, it's just an exercise in futility. I mean, just that we never have to, at least while I'm here.
Yeah, this is one of those things that you question, okay, is it a wise use of, in this case, staff time to get it done? Well, if we ever need it, you're damn straight.
It's like Keith says, you hope for the best, but you have to plan for the worst. So.
Yeah.
I member of the Wellness Committee, and so I've been doing different, just the kind of using some of my graphic skills to do the thumbnail flyers. Coming up, I mean, not just read the list, but I will be wrapping up my role as APA ambassador here by August. I continue to go out and give presentations on that. I went to Ames Golden K last week or the week before. Great group. Great, great group. I come to Nevada Golden K, I think, 2 weeks from now, or maybe 3 weeks. Been to Rotary. Been to a couple school groups, so I've been filling out my information online for the American Planning Association. National County Government Month is next month, and so I'll be putting together the schedule of outreach and probably do an open house like we did last year. I think that was in tandem with the Citizen of the Year Award, and still looking at early April for that. Again, the PPI will be coming to you here in April. KUPCOG will be to a committee in April, probably April or May for you guys. I'll see how that committee meeting goes. I will be in front of you late March, early April, and Rick mentioned it earlier, talking about the using the TIF money, or funding, I should say, not necessarily just using TIF money, but the mechanism for funding the research park. And then in tandem with that, I'd like to talk to you about some procedural items for the urban renewal area, looking at some examples I found, maybe some more easier ways to do the information up front. I've been videotaping the board supervisors' meetings. They actually have had a few hits on YouTube. They're there. I have.
You been watching this way?
No, I haven't.
I've not publicized them, and nor have I put a link on our website. With your go-ahead, I'd like to do both. I have publicized them on social media, but beyond that, not a press release. But I'd like to put a link maybe on your webpage. You can watch YouTube videos of past meetings here.
Do we track, and maybe this is for you, Shelley, do we track how many people listen to the audio of these meetings? Do we have that somewhere? I'd be really interested to know how many people are listening to the audio, and once we start to publicize the video, do those numbers change at all?
Right.
I can follow up with IT on that.
It costs money for us to do that.
I don't think so. No, because it's just creating a link.
Yeah.
Civic Plus does have an option for us to use our media center and create other things,
right.
And I'm like, no, we don't need
that. Why
wouldn't
we just put it up on YouTube
and
let anybody who wants to see it, see it?
County services sheets that you see around the posters, I'll be updating that now that community life program no longer exists and we have some restructuring that has occurred. Floodplain and the cap, shouldn't that be CIP? Yeah, CIP. Story Map is an Esri product. Esri is the maker of our GIS program that we use here at Story County, and it's pretty much industry standard. Story Map is just what it says. It's a map that tells the story of whatever you're trying to put out there. So I'm going to be working with Matt to do that. One of the CIP, I think that'd be really fun. Ames does something like that, and it's a visual image so people can see. We'll use a research park, for example. Here's $1.1 million, and this year, here's what it is going for. Here's some plans. Just another public engagement tool that I think would be very beneficial to use. And I want to do the same with the floodplain. And I'll be doing extensive research or outreach, pardon me, in the next couple months on the floodplain to all the property owners in the floodplain. Working on the broadband training and awareness program. That's part of the Connect Iowa 5 strategies that you tasked me with. I'll be coming back to you on discussing cemetery training. We haven't had a discussion if we provide this to township trustees, if this is something the county will be paying for or not. And then trying to finish up that wellness manual I've been dealing with for a long time. Something that's not on there, I have been nominated by the Iowa Floodplain Stormwater Management Association to serve as one of the certification board of regents for the ASFPM, Association of State Floodplain Managers. They're the entity that oversees the Certified Floodplain Management Program. There are 38 chapters. And I just actually during the meeting received notice that I'm one of 8 nominees nationwide to serve on the Board of Regents. They'll be deciding that in the next, it sounds like, month or so.
Oh, well, congratulations. Yeah, great honor, but tell me what that entails.
I would be responsible, and of course the board would have to approve me doing this, but I would have to go to the national ASFPM meeting annually, like this year's in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Part of it is looking at the continuing education credits and programming that it governs certified floodplain managers. Then there's, I think they said, 2 additional meetings a year where you meet as a committee and talk about test questions. Just like a board of regents does oversees the whole certified floodplain management program. And I did get a latest statistic. There are now over 9,000 CFMs nationwide. Which is, and a lot of colleges are now starting to have majors.
And we're going to turn Jerry into one of those, right?
Yeah. The certified CFM status may be a few years down the road. I would just want to get him trained locally, first of all. I don't know if he needs to know coastal flooding, but you do need to know coastal flooding for CFM. Yeah. So I will let you know about that. But floodplain management, Garland has been exceptional to help me out, and so to make her job a little bit easier as well as mine, I've tasked myself with making some forms so that the data entry is more simple and straightforward rather than how cumbersome I have tended to make it. So with that, I have scheduled training coming up. I'll be in Floodplain 101 county staff later this month, early April. I had about 18-20 county staff reply to
that. That's outstanding.
I was so excited. But what that means is I'm going to have to do probably a couple because I don't think the EOC will allow. I want to do some hands-on training, but it's a simple 101, then some more in-depth with Jerry. And then I will be attending an APA meeting. The session is called Tomorrow's Economy on March 22nd. Actually, the keynote speaker on that called and left me a voicemail yesterday, and I need to follow up with her today. She'd like me to be one of the panelists, too.
Oh, cool.
Talking about Story County's experience with how we're looking at what's heading for the tomorrow's economy. Iowa Water Conference will be March 23rd and 24th, and I will end my 6 years on the IFSMA Board of Directors. I am no longer able to serve after 6 years, and happily stepping down, but I'll still probably be doing some committee work. And then SMART Conference on April 28th, my graduate HM year. Do you have any questions? Or anything you want me to be working on, adding my work program that I've forgotten?
Oh, yeah, there's so much room to add to your work program.
There is a really funny space.
We'll let you know.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Doing a good job, Leanne. Thank you.
Yeah. Keep it up.
Okay, that takes us to public forum number 2, comments from the public, and I have not an agenda. We're going to take any actions on the comments that are current open meeting, well, maybe so in the future. I see anybody moving towards the mic. Liaison assignments and committee meetings. Wayne.
Pass.
Rick. Pass. Announcements, Wayne.
Tomorrow is the Iowa Association County a Day at the Capitol, and Thursday, Friday is the ISAC Spring School. After the Des Moines Marriott, so I will be down for both of those tomorrow at 1:30 instead of being up at the Capitol. The seat committee that I serve on dealing with the auditor's training is scheduled to meet at the Secretary of State's office from 1 to about 1:30 to 3, so I'll probably, you know, need to be there for that.
Okay.
Rick. Nothing other than I'm headed for a Big 12 basketball tournament in Kansas City.
Bring us a victory, our championship.
Fortunately, we got an easy.
Absolutely. Wouldn't want it any other way.
I'll pass. Motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second. Motion for second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Or adjourned.
Yeah, boy, I've got a snake in the spell.